Yes, today is Wednesday, just after 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Truthy Woodring, joined by Dwayne Rainey here in the studio.
Again.
Thanks for coming.
Welcome
up.
Back.
Oh, yeah. I was in Kentucky the last couple of weeks. I'm not a big fan of this culture that just is always go, 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 go. But then here I am, go, go, go. How many times do I come and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to Kentucky. Oh, I just got back from Kentucky. But I was...
And you're going to be doing it a few more times, I'm sure, before the year is out.
I was there for my dad's 80th birthday, though, which is nice.
Angel food cake. And what else are you going to take and get a preacher on his birthday?
Angel
what
food kind cake. Of, yeah, that's food the, cake. That's the only kind of cake we ever have, which is fine. So for today's show, the first thing I'm going to play is kind of like an interview recording clip, whatever, from a guy that picked me up when I was hitchhiking a couple of weeks ago. I usually take the bus down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and then to get to my parents' place, it's another, I don't know, couple hours drive, 80 miles or something. And so I do it different ways, but this time I took my scooter. I have this little, it's kind of like a Razor scooter, you know, a kick scooter, but it's actually a Zooter scooter with bigger wheels, and it's really great for hitchhiking or traveling on the bus. Just fold it up, and the Greyhound, it fits in the overhead. And in the Megabus, I just put it back in the back. Anyway, so I got off the bus in Knoxville, the Megabus, and then caught the city bus to the north end of town. And I had a little sign I'd made in my notebook with some markers that happened to have a sign for Cumberland Gap. And I scootered up to a good place on the road and stuck out my sign. And after not very long, not probably like, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. Well, it's hard to say because I'd scooter some and I'd stop and hold out my sign. Then I'd scooter some and then stop and hold out my sign. Yeah, not like I'm going to scooter 80 miles, but I like to show a good faith effort that I'm trying to get home.
Yeah, no way. One way there.
I believe.
Cumberland Gap or bust.
Anyway, so this car swerved over and honked and waved. Hey, come on, come on. So I scootered over there, scootered up there, and jumped in. And there was a man in the front seat, a man in the driver's seat, and a woman in the front seat. And Aaron and Jessica, I think. The sound quality on this has quite a bit of drone of the car, so I hope it's tolerable for listeners.
In your car.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good idea, making you a sign that says where you're going.
Yeah, it usually helps.
Yeah, that's
better
good.
Than just asking for a ride.
Yeah. I asked this one guy on the bus who he said, yeah, my family's on vacation at Norse Lake, and so we went up there when I got off the bus, and I was like, well, I'm looking for a ride north. If I could maybe get a ride with you, you can think about it. I told him that in D.C. when we got on D.C. But when he got off the bus, he just darted the other way.
Yeah, you should have hit him. It takes me about 3 hours to tell my story as far as sitting down and telling you exactly from my very first memories until the person that you've meeting today and how I was able to turn it around. And what I went through to get to be able to turn it around. And this is the truth right here, if I ever said it. I thank God for giving me the awareness and the willingness to understand what right and wrong was and being able to turn it around. And that's exactly what, you know, that's the only thing that ever saved me.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying about kids, that it's such a critical thing at that young age to know they belong somewhere for someone to like love them.
Yeah, and I never experienced that, even from grandparents. Hey, I lived on the streets. When I was a freshman in high school, I'd sleep. I'll show you where I used to sleep. And the doves would wake me up when they leave out in the morning. I'd sleep on the back of this Mary's Home Furnishing on a concrete slab where trucks back up to unload furniture.
Who was it home?
They left me when I was 14. They drove off and left me here, and they went back north, and I stayed here.
Uh-huh.
And I went home one day, and they's gone.
Uh-huh.
And from that point on, I stayed there for a week out in the hills, out there in Howard's Quarter. And that's when I realized they wasn't coming back home. There was no mom and dad no more. And and I was just a kid. I was 14 and a half, 15 years old. And my dog got run over. I stayed there because I had a beagle that I'd brought from up north, raised him my whole life.
Uh-huh.
And he got run over in the road, and I watched it. And uh-huh. I, for some reason, in my mind, that was a turning point. When I, that was all I had. Uh-huh. And when that dog got run over, it was just crazy. It, from that point on, I felt sorry. I look back now, and I can't imagine how I used to hurt people, you know, and just, it's sad. I have to deal with that every day. That's something that I deal with. I hate it. I mean, I hate that I was that I hurt people physically and probably mentally and all kinds of, not just one, I'm talking 100. I mean, it was crazy. Uh-huh. And, but.
Can you share again, like, your earliest memory and what that was like when you were really, really small?
The first memory as I ever had was dad was not present in the home. And my mom, we had a waterbed. They had a waterbed in the back room. And my mom would stay up all night doing drugs. So she'd sleep all day. And as a kid, you wake up at 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. You're wanting to go get up, do things, watch mm-hmm. cartoons. She would make me stay in that bed. I had to lay in that bed like this all day until she gets up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. So here I'm sitting there all day, I'd get in trouble if I tried to get out of the bed, you know what I'm saying? So what I would do was I would sneak out while she was asleep, uh-huh. before ever kindergarten, anything. So I'm just 3 and 4 years old, and I'd get on my little big wheel, and I was in the street. I remember cars sliding sideways because they keep from hitting me, because uh-huh. I didn't know, I hadn't grasped yet that yeah. stay out of the road. I was just a kid. So, and then finally she caught me, and I'd get in trouble, you know, whatever. But even as a young kid, the police started bringing me home, busting street lights, shooting guns in city limits, just as a young kid.
You were starving for attention.
I think I just wanted, and then at the age of 8 and a half, 9, I was molested. And I know that it's crazy for me to even talk about that. It took 33 years for me to ever even admit that had happened. But predators will prey on kids that don't have, and that's what happened. Uh-huh. An old man, two houses down from ours, finally took advantage of the situation. And I think that was also a big turning point in my life, was when that happened.
In terms of like the rage and the anger, and the hopelessness, it
was just like it was over for me. Even and that's sad to say that a person at the age of 8 and a half and 9 would already give up on themselves, you know, because everybody else had. So that was a real big point in my life, and it was a very.
Did you keep all that to yourself when
for
you were
33
little?
Years? I never said a word that had happened, and because I was.
But right there alone ate you alive.
Oh, it did. It was tough, but I knew that I had to get it out if I ever wanted to ever. But I never. I was afraid to tell my mom and dad because I knew my dad would go kill dude. I mean, that was bottom line. There was no. There'd be no talking. Dad would go kill him. So I didn't want dad to be gone again. Even though they wasn't there. I still loved them. I still wanted them to love me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to think that it was my fault or whatever, you know. So I just kept it in for a long, 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 a very long time. So that was a big turning point. But that's when I really, really started getting in trouble with the police up north, up in Cleveland, Ohio.
What are some of the things that contributed to turning the other way?
My children, I wasn't being able to be a father to them, and also I was getting older. Right there's Mary's home furnishing. Right behind it is a place where I used to sleep. You can see the dock right there underneath the thing. But I wasn't being a productive person in society. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I was it was just time for me to let that go. And I was locked up when it happened, when I started turning it around. And even all the jailers and stuff started seeing a difference in me. And they was just like, Aaron, I quit fighting. I just stopped it one day, and that was it. I remember it was breaking daylight. And for hours that night, I begged the Lord to take away the anger and the anxiety and all that in my life. And he didn't do it right away. It's not a miracle that just something happened. But over about a six-month period, I wasn't angry, and I wasn't fighting all the time. And that was 3.5 years ago. And then the drug task force seen that. He's like, wow, Aaron, you know, this is unbelievable. It's a miracle. So they started bus loading kids into me to talk. And that's how it got started. I started, and they started listening to my story, and the cops was coming to hear my story, and it was kind of a big deal around here. This town could not believe that Aaron Eads, of all people, that had wrecked this town. I had wreaked havoc in this town right here. Was able to turn it around. It was a kind of a miracle. And to this day, I've not had I've got angry a couple times, and I felt bad. I've lost control a couple times. But other than that, I'm in a sober living environment right now. Clean. Don't drink. Don't do drugs. And try to help younger people. And try to help myself. And think, today, I tell you, I'm happy with the person that I've been able to come. And I never would have thought that. I never thought in a million years that Aaron Eads could be happy with himself, and I'm getting there. You know, I'm getting there. Ruth, I gotta go, hon.
Thank you so much for the ride. Yes. Sharing a little bit.
She's gonna take you on to your destination.
So that was a little interview with someone that picked me up a couple weeks ago when I was hitchhiking from Knoxville north to Cumberland Gap, Tennessee. You're listening to Out There. This is Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3, Northampton. Dwayne, do you have any thoughts, comments, announcements?
Yes. Word of the month is apple.
Yes.
The apples are coming into season now, and I don't know if you don't have them in your yard. I'm sure your neighbor has them in their yard, or there's plenty of apple trees, and there's plenty of apples to be found.
That reminds me of another little Kentucky story, an apple gleaning story. Yeah, there's so many apples to glean.
And you can only eat so many.
Yeah. Dry them, can them, bake them, compost them. So, yes.
That's what happens. The thing that gets me is, like, a lot of these people don't really want an apple tree in their yard. And it's kind of a nuisance, like all these apples dropping on the ground, and then the bees come and get them, and they got to mow them, and so they're happy for you to come and get them.
Yeah, it's nice if people put up signs like, please, free apples, take them. I was actually reminded, I'll get back to the Kentucky apple story in a minute, but I was reminded this morning when I was downtown about those two apple trees on the corner of the rail trail and Pleasant Street, what used to be called an Eagle Walkway. Those are dropping amazing apples. Well, I mean, they're not quite ripe yet, I don't think. But they got a lot of apples on them in a really, really public place. But those apples are slated to be demolished soon when the new building construction happens on Pleasant Street. Yeah. But so when I was in Kentucky last week, I had ridden by a house with an apple tree in the yard, loaded with these beautiful red apples and dropping. And I don't see apple trees there in along the rural road like you do here in town. So to see an apple tree full of apples and really good-looking apples was really exciting to me, especially because I didn't, like, it's a long ways from town, and food is important, right? How are you going to get food? So there was this free source of food. Maybe it was a free source. I wasn't sure. My niece and nephew saw the apple tree from the school bus on their way home from school. And so when they got home from school, they're like, hey, Ruthie, you know about that apple tree? Let's go get some apples. So we took the bicycles and rode up there, and it was next to a house that the doors and windows were kind of boarded up, and I've never really known who lived there, if anyone lived there or not, in the last couple of decades. And so anyway, I knocked on the door feeling like a fool, like who knocks on the door of a boarded up house. But anyway, I was just trying to be polite, and of course there was no answer. So then Milka and Johannan and I, we started collecting apples and picking some apples. We started eating them, and then we like filled a little bag, just a little bag, because I didn't want to take too many apples without overt permission. And then, but I knew I wanted to come back. So then a few days later.
Under the cover of darkness.
No, that's another story for a different time and place. but this story, so then I wanted to come back. So a couple days later, I came back and on the street, before I got to the guy's house, I ran into I guess what you'd call a townie here. But someone who's been around, an old family friend. Yeah, an old family friend who's been around for a while. And I was like, hey, Noel, do you know whose apple tree that is up there? And Noel was like, oh, yeah, that's Gary's. That's Gary's place. And I was like, well, where does he live? And Noel said, oh, well, right there. And I said, oh, you mean in that boarded up house? And Noel said, yeah, he's in there. In fact, he's in there right now, I know. Just go knock on the door. And he's a pretty cool guy. Just tell him, hey, just knock on the door and say, hey, Gary, I've come to talk to you about your apples. And I said, well, okay.
What is he, like, on drugs?
Well, so then I rode up there. And
boarded up windows.
Yeah, so I knocked on the door, the boarded up door with plastic taped to it. And I knocked on the door, and I said, hey, Gary, I'm here to talk to you about your apples. And I hear this voice from inside saying, huh? Oh, okay, I'm coming. I got to get up. And so then, you know, a minute later, the door opens, and this man, probably in his 40s, maybe 40s or 50s, opens the door, and he said, I had a motorcycle accident, and I was just lying down. And I said, oh, well, thanks for coming to the door. My name is Ruthie Woodring, and I live down the road, and I saw your apple trees, or your apples on your tree when I was riding by. They look amazing. And he said, oh, yeah, you want some? Help yourself. Take all you want. Sometimes people come in a car, and you know, someone came in a truck one year and fill up his truck with them. And he said, yeah, and there's two more in the backyard. You go help yourself to those, too. And I said, really? Like, I can really take all I want, like for a canning or whatever? And he said, yeah, I'll dig all you want. And I was like, cool, thanks. So then I went back, and I was picking apples in the backyard. I didn't really bring much to carry them with. Then he came out and he brought me some more grocery sacks to fill. And I said, well, can I bring you some applesauce or apple butter or something? And he said, oh, no, I don't want anything. Besides, I can't eat apples. I got diabetes. I know. It kind of broke my heart, right? I was just there in this
kind of... I already cut those trees down.
I was, like, in this paradise of manna from heaven, just nature's bounty and delight. And, it was sad that he couldn't partake. So then I picked for a little while longer. I was trying to think about something I could offer him. And so we have a pond or a lake where my parents live, and with lots of fish in it, as Dwayne, as you know.
I well know.
And so I knocked on the door again. I felt bad for making him get up again. But he said, I knocked on the door and said, oh, I'm coming. And I was like, no, you don't have to come. I just want to ask you something. But anyway, he got up and opened the door, and I said, so I was wondering if maybe you want some fish. And he said, fish? Ah, I just had breakfast. I just had some bacon and eggs. I'm not hungry. And he said, are you hungry? I'll make you a sandwich if you want. And I said,
I guess
no.
Gary doesn't get many visitors.
Well, anyway, so that was how I got apples in Kentucky. My dad and I canned a whole bunch of them. And anyway, so the apples are out there. Go get apples.
Yeah,
collect for winter.
Word of the month. The tomato season may be over, but you know what? Starts with strawberries and blueberries and tomatoes and then apples.
Well,
then it's over.
Well, maybe tomato season isn't quite over.
It is for me.
This is Guy Clark singing.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better. Bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomato. Up in the morning, out in the garden. Get you a ripe one, do not get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and pick me a big one. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. that's for sure. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake grill. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Johnny tomato seed, cause I know what this country needs is homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. But when I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden would be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Clark singing Homegrown Tomatoes. I think that song was written by Lloyd Goodson.
I got about, I don't know, 8 quarts or so in my freezer. We just had the last batch from last year.
So, Dwayne,
I saved them. Yeah. I saved both of them.
You got any announcements?
Do I have any announcements? Of course I do. On Sunday, September 6th, 3 generations of women will take the stage and bring you a musical journey that pays tribute to the roots of American music. The all-star lineup will traverse blues, jazz, folk, funk, and rock and roll, and alternative styles with intergenerational collaborations. All right, this is Sunday, September 6th, from 2 to 7 at the Music Stage at the Three County Fair. The Three County Fair goes on this weekend?
Yep.
No wonder I was going to go. I said, I'm going to the fair this weekend, last weekend. There's nothing. Shot that right to homegrown tomatoes.
I got another announcement. This is from the Northampton Department of Public Works. If you use the rail trail in Northampton, the DPW wants you to know that a portion of the rail trail will close for culvert cleaning. This is down by the Barrett Street Swamp. On Thursday, September 3rd, that's tomorrow, and Friday the 4th, the DPW is going to be working on the King Street Brook and the sedimentation basin located at the end of the bikeway by Stoddard Street and State Street.
And
at the rear,
and Shop.
Right, behind Stop and Shop. You know why that pond there never freezes?
It never does.
Why does it never freeze?
It's at Stop and Shop. They got to be doing something.
So
we chemically treat it so it won't freeze.
The ducks don't seem to mind it. They still swim in it. They kind of like it.
It's warm, yeah. So there's got to be something coming out of, like, Stop and Shop.
Maybe it's their hot water, rinse water. Anyway, so the rail trail is going to be closed from Adair Place to State and Stoddard on Thursday and Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., but it'll be open at all other times. And pedestrians and cyclists will be required to detour around the construction using Adair Place, Prospect Street, and Stoddard Street.
They got a backhoe up there already.
Yeah, I saw it. I've been seeing the surveyors walking around and stuff. It says, please be advised that there will be heavy equipment traveling up and down the bikeway at the closure location. For their own safety, all users of the bikeway will be turned back at the closure location. Tell the dogs.
Let the dogs run free. They're going to be digging it up.
All right. So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, Northampton. I got a couple more things from Kentucky I'm going to play. This one, this is my niece and nephew that I went apple picking with, talking about flies and spiders. So, honey, can you tell me what you think about spiders?
I think spiders are the best thing that happened in the world, according to the fly thingy. Because if there wasn't any spiders, flies would pretty much, there would be a real Lord of the Flies. In fact, flies would pretty mean millions of lords of flies. They rule the earth. Nice thing. They only bite because they're scared.
Milka, you have any words of wisdom about spiders?
If there weren't any spiders, then the flies would be ruling, and then they'd be in your houses, and they would be in your fruits and all that. Then people would start to put these toxic things for other animals and bugs, which would kill them or get them sick. Because there were so many flies. But if there were, which there are, spiders, they calm down the flies and all the other ones that suck your soul. That suck you.
That was my niece and nephew, Milka and Johannan. So the next thing I'm going to play is also from Kentucky. I actually recorded this back in the spring, back in March, I think. This is my brother, Chris. He raises goats and milks them and makes cheese. And so I interviewed him for a while about...
Just think.
About the process.
If you ever get a radio show in Kentucky, you can play them clips from Massachusetts.
And they'll be exotic.
Ooh. Wow.
Here she comes. She jumps in and puts her head through the stanchion, waiting for the food. Straining her neck until Chris puts it in front of her. Yum. Making cheese with my brother Chris Woodring. We'll start with milking the goats. Going into the barn.
No, it's just not workable. It won't be a sustainable solution. So what's the way forward? We stopped in a restaurant called Azure. It has red check tablecloths and soccer on giant screen TVs.
So, you want to do this in the rain?
How many goats are you milking?
So I'm milking 5 goats while I'm feeding 8 kids.
Goat jumps up on the milking stand. They know their turn?
Yeah, they know their turn, and they're well paid for their labors. I give them a generous amount of feed, which they really enjoy, as well as these young ones who haven't worked yet, but I hope that they get big enough to work next year.
How old are they before they breed or milk?
They'll be 7 months old when they breed, and they'll be 1 year old when they first start going to milk.
How much milk does a good milker give?
A good milker should give about a gallon a day. Yeah, that takes 2 milkings a day. If you only milk once a day, then their production will begin to drop, relatively quickly, and they won't be able to give as much because their udder just can't store that much milk.
What are the kids drinking or eating? Where are the kids getting the nourishment if we're getting the milk and the cheese?
Well, right now, I get the milk, and then I give the kids about half, and then in about 2 or 3 weeks, they won't need it anymore, and they'll be weaned off. So I'll get all the milk after that.
And they'll just be grazing and eating food.
Yeah, so they're eating really well right now. They're eating hay. The grass will be up in about another week, so they'll be able to graze. So they won't actually need the milk. They'd love it, and they would grow faster. They'd grow bigger if they had as much milk as they wanted, just like us, in fact. But they'll be fine on grass and food.
Grass, food, and tin cans.
Well, they don't eat tin cans. They sometimes will enjoy the label, like the taste of the glue sometimes on the old cans.
How long will it take you to get through 2 liters?
It takes about 6 minutes per goat, about three minutes a liter. It depends on the goat. Some goats are more difficult to milk than others, just with the way their udder is made.
So after the does give birth, if you want to get milk from the doe, how does that work with the kids?
There are all different kinds of processes for separating the mothers from their young. What we often do here is we actually try to catch the kid on its way out. And then we'll immediately take it into our house and adopt it. And then we'll milk the mother right away as well, and then bring her milk to the kid. That's the typical process. And goats are good mothers, so they do miss their kids. And so they do go through usually a process of mourning for a day or two as they wonder where their baby went to. The alternative is to leave the kid with the mother and then try to separate them later. And if you have two completely separated fields with very good fences, you can do that effectively when you want to later on. But it becomes costly, and the kid will go back to the mother and take all the milk. And take all the milk as much as 6 months later if they know each other, if they recognize each other. It's a tough challenge at times because you do recognize the maternal instinct, and it doesn't stress the kid, but it does stress the mother to be separated, especially during the first 4 months. Anytime during the first 4 months, if you take the kid away from the mother, yeah, she'll be significantly stressed.
I noticed that some of the mothers weren't allowing kids to nurse just because they'd been separated. They're like, one of these kids.
Yeah, that's right. They were separated at birth, so the mothers don't know which kid is theirs. All they know is they lost their kid, and they have these strangers coming and trying to steal their milk from them. So they won't allow a kid that they don't believe is theirs to nurse them.
Chris, can you tell me how you make goat cheese? Okay, let's say you milk the goats, and you bring the milk pails in, and you set them on the counter in the morning. And then what happens?
Well, then I look for my filter. I got a brand new filter, and I filter my milk. It's a key point that your filter not be used or not be reused. So I filter the milk to get out all the kinds of flotsam and jetsam that sometimes falls into the milk container when you're milking, but especially if you goat hairs. And then, depending on my process, I'll usually inoculate it. And in my case, inoculation is just yogurt. And then I leave it. I leave it for 12 hours. That's right.
So at room temperature.
I leave it at room temperature. Usually it's 12 hours because that'll be the next time I milk. So then I bring the temperature of that milk up to 86 degrees.
And then what?
And then I put the rennet in it, and that's what causes the milk to set. Uh-huh. It starts to separate just a few minutes later, but it doesn't have a hard curd for about 45 minutes to an hour. So I usually just set my timer for an hour, or I go milking and come back an hour later, and it's ready to work with. Uh-huh.
What is rennet?
Animal rennet is actually a bacteria that comes out of the small intestine of a calf, mm-hmm. of a young cow, which is still drinking the milk from its mother. So it's a bacteria which the animal uses to break down the milk. So once it sets, then I cut that set milk. I cut it cross-hatch it so that the whey can run out the pores of the curd. And then I bring up the temperature again from 86 degrees up to 96 degrees.
You don't have to do it to exactly any of those particular degrees. You don't even have to raise it from 86. But by raising the temperature, then you can control somewhat how hard your cheese will be. I use 96 because it's a number that I can remember.
Okay, so then after you've brought it back up to 96.
Then I take it off the heat and let it sit for about 10 minutes. Then I take it and I pour the whey off the curd. And then I will take the whey out to my animals, because basically all my animals love whey. Chickens love whey. Ducks love whey. My horse loves the whey. Goats love whey. Dogs love whey. Cats even like whey. So yeah, I have a lot of takers on whey. Milk is so much nicer to drink than whey that I can't think of a reason why I would drink whey if I had milk to drink.
I mean, part of the reason you're making cheese is because you have so much milk, right?
Yeah, that's right. The reason I make cheese is because I can get a large part of the nutritional value from the milk and make it into a form that will last a long time, that doesn't go bad, and it's quite yummy. Yeah. I have a crawl space underneath the house where it stays fairly cool, and I just have a cheese refrigerator there that I use exclusively for my cheese. In other places, they use caves, but I don't have a cave nearby. So I put the salt in there, chopped it up nicely. Now I'm putting it into my cheese press. Each cow makes about a pound of cheese. Tomorrow when I'm ready to make another cheese, 12 hours later, I'll pop her out of the press. If I'm going to age it, I'll coat the outside with salt and wrap it in a paper towel. I call it a diaper. And I just let it sweat for a while. And usually it takes 3 days to 7 days. So I'll change the diaper every day. Mm-hmm. Or every other day. And then when it stopped weeping, then I'll coat it in wax and put it in my cheese refrigerator. Forget about it for a year or so.
So, Chris, when it comes to raising dairy goats, that those females are the ones that give the milk. So, and so a herd of dairy goats is mostly females. Can you talk a little bit about the male-female balance and how that's maintained or dealt with?
Well, on a dairy goat farm, the ladies, in order for them to produce milk, they have to produce offspring. And so they produce the milk for their offspring, and that's part of their natural cycle. They usually will cycle once a year. So they'll have offspring once a year, and usually they'll have two. Sometimes they'll have three or one, but they average about two offspring per year, and then that then recycles their milking production cycle. Offspring comes half-half, 50% male, 50% female. And if you're lucky, you'll get more females. Then you have less males to deal with. And if you're unlucky, you get more males than females. But if you average over your years, you'll end up 50-50. Males don't produce milk. And so on a dairy goat operation, they are often a problem, because then you have to figure out what to do with all these unneeded, unwanted, unprofitable little critters, which are just as cute as the females, but they become less cute as they get older and then start into their productive cycle. Males typically will, about 6 or 8 months old, they will want to breed. But you only need one male to take care of about 20 or 30 females. So 50-50 doesn't work very well. Also, in a dairy goat operation, you'll usually have a finite amount of resources as far as barn space, fodder, food, and just how much time you have to milk and what your market is for milk. So usually you'll get the balance of females that are productive for you for the amount of milk you can use, and then every new animal on your farm then becomes excess, which you have to look for an outlet for.
So what do you do with the male kids?
So what I do with, both males and females is I try to find a market for them. Males, I will usually castrate them when they're just a few days old or a week old. I use a rubber band castration method, which means I just put a rubber band around their balls, around their gonads. And so usually within about 2 weeks, then it dries up and falls off. And if they get older, that becomes a much more traumatic experience for them. As well as for the owner. So I find that to be the most humane method.
So then the weathers, as they get older, what are some of the options for them?
They have a number of different options. I will usually offer them up on the local market as pet
companion animals, or as I'll call them, as weed control machines. And so some will be moved off the farm like that, and then others will be bought for food, and then eventually I'll use them as well as food.
So you'll butcher them. You butcher them yourself?
Yeah, I'll butcher them. Well, I say that I will butcher them myself. The actual reality is after having goats for, I think, 6 or 7 years, I've always found some other outlet for these animals rather than butchering them myself, but that would always be an option as well.
If you don't decide to castrate them right after they're born, how does it affect their personality as they become full grown?
The goats, when they get to breeding season, the hormones hit them really hard. And so they will go, it looks like they're going crazy, but they go berserk. It really, really changes their personality. They go on hyperdrive to breed. It doesn't really make them aggressive to humans. It's not that they become dangerous animals, but they're no longer your meek and mild kid, which you raise up by hand, but they're completely driven to breed and compete with other males. So on a small farm, if you've got 10 of these, they will spend the entire time trying to establish who's the dominant male, which can be a bloody, messy, an ugly affair. It just, it wastes a lot of time and energy, and you don't need more than one male. And you don't even need one dominant male for breeding purposes. You just need one male, functional. Yeah. So having a bunch of young males trying to establish order does doesn't bring peace and tranquility to your farm. they also put out scent, and as part of dogs will mark their territory. And the good thing about dogs is when dogs mark territory, they mark something that's not themselves. So they'll mark posts, your car wheel. Goats mark themselves. So they use their beard as a scent attractant, and then they scent their beard with their own urine. And that can, if you have only one male doing that, it can become more or less manageable. Or you can get used to it, but when you've got 10 males doing that, at the same time as they're trying to physically create dominance, it's not nice.
So if the male goats are headed for the meat market and they haven't been castrated and their hormones are kicking out, will that affect the meat?
It'll certainly affect the flavor of the meat. And so there will be a whole period when they're in high heat. When most people, I personally would not enjoy their meat or their flavor. And then you would have to wait until they're in a dormant season, as you would say, in plants, when then they would have less scent, and then their meat would be more enjoyable.
Anything else with that?
It's part of the cycle of life. And it happens in the natural order as well, out in nature. You have you have a balance between males and females. But, for example, you look at deer. Deer, typically, one male can take care of 12 or 15 females. And so there's a process out there where males become, they establish who's the healthiest, who has the best genetics, and who's the most dominant. But in nature, then, you have wolves and other things that would help diminish the excess males as well as the excess females. So in a human-managed system, you have to look for ways of doing the same thing, where you have to manage the excess livestock.
That was an interview with my brother, Chris Woodring, in Kentucky. You're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ Northampton, 103.3 FM. One of the things Chris was saying about the meat and the flavor of the meat, I remember when I was a kid, I'm not a big meat eater by any means, but when I was a kid, we lived on the farm and my dad butchered animals and I ate whatever was put in front of me or else.
You still do. Yours and
or else
what you
nobody
got on
else
your plate.
Gets any. Yeah. And we had this hyper-aggressive male buck named Roy. And I can remember getting knocked over, like I'd go to feed the goats and when I was little, and he'd come butt me in the chest and knock me over. And he was just, like my brother said, he was a havoc-causing male and extremely hormonal and smelly. And my dad finally just butchered them because he was threatening the human children. And boy, my dad tried making meatloaf, sausage. My dad tried to spice up Roy every way he could, but we could always tell when we were eating a piece of Roy out of the freezer.
All right. Good old Roy. I found a boy today.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
Check out Uneasy Listening Saturday nights at our new time from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. You'll hear all kinds of music with a different lyrical theme every week, right here on Valley Free Radio 103.3 FM and streaming live on valleyfreeradio.org.
Join me, DJ Fife, for Drum and Bass with DJ Fife, Monday nights at 8 o'clock on the Valley Free Radio, 103.3 MHz, Northampton, Massachusetts. Each week you'll hear a live DJ mix of jungle drum and bass that highlights the biggest and best from around the world. Listen in for DJ guest mixes, locally produced tunes, and news for the jungle massive. That's Drum and Bass with DJ Fife, Mondays at 8 o'clock, part of the Monday Music Night on the Valley Free Radio.
Here, you're listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey is also in the studio. Thanks for being here, Dwayne.
My pleasure.
We have some more announcements. Do you have something right there, Dwayne, that you wanted to read?
Well, I know that there's a workshop or... working for all those people who have hours of community stuff to do at Florence Organic Gardens.
Yeah, work party.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. There's a work party today from 5 to 7:30 and tomorrow from 5 to 7:30 at the Florence Organic Gardens. I will be there, but I will not be signing autographs.
Will you be throwing rotten tomatoes?
Probably not, but...
Here's an announcement. So this is an event coming up on Monday, September 14th at 7 p.m. It's called Living in a Post-Racial Society, or not. Although we might like to think of racial bias as a thing of the past, there are many subtle ways in which it can still influence our thoughts, feelings, and actions. Is there anything we can do about it? Linda Tropp is a professor of social psychology at UMass Amherst and an expert in prejudice reduction strategies and social relations between groups. This is going to be Monday, September 14th, 7 p.m. at Union Station in downtown Northampton, 125A Pleasant Street. That's on the bike path. I think that's where the platform bar is. Anyway, on the bike path where the train stops. Did you have something else over there that you wanted to
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a jazz festival coming on next weekend, Saturday, the 12th. But one thing I like is the Northampton Arts Council Retro Fair. It's chalk drawings on the sidewalks.
Oh, yeah.
They make some really good ones. So the drawings take place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. next Friday, not this Friday, but Friday, September 11th.
Second Friday of the month, Arts Night Out.
Yeah, so, I mean, they do some really incredible stuff.
Cool. Also coming up on...
11 artists. Cool. Right here.
Great, yeah. 11. It'll be really colorful. I always forget, but then when I come through on Saturday, there's
and
usually something
left. I hope
it
doesn't rain.
Yeah. coming up on Monday, September 7th, is the monthly Surge meeting. It's at the Unitarian Society of Northampton. Surge stands for Showing Up for Racial Justice. It's the Western Mass chapter of the national group. And again, this meeting is Monday, September 7th. A little bit about Surge. They're a national network of groups and individuals organizing white people for racial justice. And through community organizing, mobilizing, and education, Surge moves white people to act as part of a multiracial majority for justice with passion and accountability. We work to connect people across the country while supporting and collaborating with local and national racial justice organizing efforts. Surge provides a place to build relationships, skills, and political analysis to act for change. It reminds me of this morning, I was at Smith Campus Center on the computer bank there, and the way the computers are there, CNN plays right above the computers. So I half do my computer work, and I half listen and watch CNN. And I'm not a hardcore TV or movie watcher. I'm kind of thin skinned to some things. And anyway, I don't know where I was quite going.
CNN.
Oh yeah. And so I guess today there's a hearing in Baltimore for the Freddie Gray stuff. So there were people there in the streets that were calling for justice, and CNN was covering it. And when I was watching it, a man had was getting arrested. I think it was live. It sounded like for leading people off of the sidewalk and into the street. According to the CNN reporter, she said that things had escalated and he got tased, but I didn't see that part. Anyway, they showed live video of the man. He was handcuffed with his hands behind his back, being escorted by lots of police. And the man was calmly speaking, like, loud enough so bystanders could hear. It seemed pretty calm to me. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I assumed some message for justice. And so, yeah, it says some of the police were leading him to the police van, and the other police had their backs to the situation. And we're like facing the people on the media and people on the sidewalk or in the street. They were trying to, they had cameras and stuff, and they were trying to keep bystanders from pressing in too close. And when they got to the back of the van, according to as well as I could see the video, the doors are open and the man's still articulating his piece, and he like stiffens up instead of being stuffed up in the van. And I think like he might maybe put his foot down on the bumper so he wouldn't just be stuffed in the van. He was still talking, I think. His hands are cuffed behind him. There's also these cops around. And the live CNN narrator there keeps saying how the man is resisting arrest. I thought she said he was, like, fighting the police, but I didn't. That may have been my interpretation. And saying how he's not cooperating, he's resisting because he didn't just, like, jump in the van. But you can see it on camera. The guy's having a conversation with the police officers. They're calm. He's calm. It appeared that he might have decided to go limp. I couldn't really see if it was... his
so much for
choice
news,
or not.
The truth in news.
But yeah, it was just, I couldn't believe how the reporter was talking as if the guy was fighting the police when he obviously wasn't. And then they showed the footage of the guy lying on the pavement. Like I said, I couldn't tell if he went limp of his own volition or what happened. And the people with the cameras are trying to get closer to the police, but the police are like poking and pushing people back with billy clubs or some sort of nightsticks or something. And the CNN reporter says that the police are being proactive, very proactive. It's like she just would not use the word aggressive. Anyway.
Yeah, because she could be getting parking tickets, that's why. Speeding tickets, parking tickets, your taillights out.
So one of the things that Surge has been doing is putting up Black Lives Matter, or doing a door-to-door knocking campaign to get people to put up Black Lives Matter yard signs. And some of the yard signs have been vandalized. And just a little piece. I just met someone who put up a Black Lives Matter yard sign in front of her house, and it got vandalized. Someone wrote all where it said black. And she responded with some signs, a series of signs, kind of the old Burma shave style, that said, "Yes, all lives matter, but it's black lives that are under siege, now, historically, and in many ways." The slogan actually means black lives matter too, and black lives matter as much as all other lives. That all the other lives matter in this country is the default and not in question. It's like this. And there's a cartoon where one person says, "Well, I think that all lives matter." And then they have a fire hose saying, "We should care exactly equally at all times about everything." And in the next panel it says, "All houses matter." And they have the fire hose and they're hosing down a house while the house next door is burning down, but the one they're hosing down is okay. The Black Lives Matter sign on this lawn is a statement of support for fellow citizens who are under attack and an invitation to talk about it. Leave your contact information if you want to. Conversation is good and productive. Vandalism is neither. We can do better as neighbors, as a town, and as a country. P.S. Another way to think of it is that when people say, "Save the rainforests," they're not saying, "F all other forests."
So stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock. That was me just reading what someone who put up a Black Lives Matter yard sign, how she responded to the vandalism of it. You've been listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Tune in again next Wednesday from 4 to 5. And again, Democracy Now! Is up from 5 to 6, and then at 6 o'clock is Alternatively Speaking with Dr. Saskia Cote.